Hi, I'm John Ingold.
I'm Sagar Barishi.
And welcome to the Game Narrative Kaleidoscope podcast. Each week we open the Game Narrative Kaleidoscope book and we pluck out another author of an interesting and fascinating article on the craft and narrative design, and we invite them onto the program to ask them about how they do what they do, why they do what they do, and what they think about writing. This week we're thrilled to have Josh Boykin with us. Josh, hi.
Hey, it's good to be here. Thank you so much for the invite. It's I don't know. I got the email and I was like, oh, I get to be one of the cool kids. y'all have interviewed such great people. Like, it's really great to be a part of it.
Thank you so much for coming on. I love the idea that we might be the cool kids. That's not a thing.
Did you hear that, John? Let's go tell our children this. They'll believe us.
It turns out the way to be cool is to make your own club and be the top of it.
Exactly.
I've already learned so much from the time we've spent together. It was just like, yeah, just make your own club and then you are the cool kids.
There we go. The moral in the first 10 seconds. Anyway, back to the point of the enterprise. Josh, for the benefit of listeners who don't necessarily know you or your work, could you please just sort of introduce who you are, what you do, how do you fit into the games industry?
Yeah, there's a weird long story in there, which I have a lot of. So I'll try to keep it moderately brief. Okay. I started working games in 2009. I was writing about games for a small website, really excited by the idea of being able to get review copies of games, because that was back when they put them on these things called discs.
Oh, yes.
And
the old era.
Yeah, when you put a disc in the machine that was playing the game, most all of the entire game was actually present on that disc. Is fascinating. But but I had gotten started writing about games, like, yes, because I was like, a friend of mine had gotten a review copy of I don't remember what, but primarily because I had always wanted to write about games. One of my the earliest projects that I like have a really strong memory of in high school, I had brought in a copy of Final Fantasy IV to my high school English class to talk about this opening scene between Cecil and Rosa, where they're Cecil's about to step out to go on this journey. And I was trying to talk about some of the like literary value of this scene that was showing up in this Super Nintendo game. And I remember watching some of my classmates' eyes glaze over and then other classmates just be like, really intrigued. And I was like, there is something here in games that so many people are missing, and I want to find space to help folks better understand the connections between the games and the real world, that like games can be this incredible mechanism, not just for play, but for like storytelling and understanding. And so, in college, I started writing about games and doing reviews and that kind of thing to try and essentially garner a little bit of platform to start like, well, let's do this review of this game and also talk a little bit about the representation of these characters in this place, which one of my editors at the time was not the biggest fan of. But that's okay, because that's so much of the history of games writing has been, you know, a lot of marginalized people speaking their mind and then seeing some folks not be happy about that and then continue to speak your mind anyway. So I did games writing that way for a while. I got into I started IntelliGame back in 2015. That's scary. And so IntelliGame was basically my attempt to say, let's take this idea of writing about games and talking about them more from the personal perspective, as opposed to focusing as sort of like commercial product. And so I started a blog that became a Twitch channel, that became a community, and a number of folks who get together and we make connections between games and the real world. So I find it really incredible seeing not just the way that you can play a game and talk about it like literature, right? Which I think a lot of us, especially in from a game writing background, like want to do on a regular basis. We're really excited about that. But I think about how many people are out there who don't regularly get the opportunity to sort of deep dive into the media that they are spending time with. And the ways that a lot of people will feel intimidated by the idea of having a serious conversation about the lore, the ideas, the, you know, trying to make those connections between what's happening in their media and themselves, because they're used to having those experiences associated with like a red pen in a literature class.
Yeah, totally.
And so, you know, it's that, oh, am I going to get the answer wrong? Am I going to not interpret this thing correctly? And so my hope was to build a space where people would feel less of that intimidation and would be able to explore a game, whether it's something new to them or something that they've played a ton of times, and be able to better understand and call out some of the reasons why these things resonate. I think for me, thinking about like playing Ocarina of Time, for me, the first time I played Ocarina of Time was like 2 years ago. And I played it on stream. Yeah. I don't know how I skipped over that one. You know, just this little game on the the video game timeline. But seeing a bunch of people come into watching this stream for a game that they've known for decades, but having these conversations about like, what does it mean to be a child who now has the responsibility of saving the world put on their shoulders? What does it mean to be thrust into adulthood? And then to see folks in the chat share these stories about their own experiences being thrust into adulthood and the ways that they were like, I didn't really think about this way before. Maybe it's been a decade since I came back to this game. So to me, that's what I want in all of my experiences in games, are to find opportunities to, it's my gateway to peopling, right? It's my gateway to how do we use this as a space where we can build some common ground and then have more vulnerable discussions, because we at least can feel like we're on the same page a bit. I think oftentimes when we try to have especially discussions about things that can be more politically volatile, if we go in without having some sort of shared knowledge, understanding, vocabulary, something, oftentimes the vocabulary that we then start with, that language is already loaded. And so we start choosing teams before or making assumptions about where people are standing before we get the opportunity to actually find out. And so my goal is not to necessarily do the like, well, both sides, that's not really the goal here. It's more about giving us a nuanced understanding of our own perspectives so that when we're having conversations with each other, we can understand some of the places where we should be banding together and some of the other places where we have a stronger sense of where we need to separate. And so I say all that to say, those are sort of my guiding themes for the work I try to do in games. IntelliGames been my sort of biggest love and passion project, but my other two most active projects right now are working as the head of curation for Game Devs of Color Expo. So we curate games from all over the world every year. We put them, we have a showcase that we, the Game Devs of Color Direct that we put on every September, as well as a multi-day speaker series. And we also do a Steam sale where we highlight a bunch of games. And those are some really wonderful opportunities to highlight the works of people of color from all kinds of perspectives. And I'm also the narrative director on Lancer Tactics. There's a tabletop role-playing game, Lancer, which self-described mud and lasers style, like big fighting mechs, but also like really like crunchy build it, you know, build and customize your mech loadout. good friend of mine, Olive Perry. She's the creative director and the project lead, did a Kickstarter for it a few years ago, which was pretty successful. I joined the project about a year ago, starting as an editor for some of the scripts that they had kickstarted, done the Kickstarter stretch goal thing, and the number of conversations I could have about Kickstarter stretch goals. But I got started as an editor, and I'm now the narrative director. I also do biz dev, marketing, indie dev. You mm-hmm. wear a lot of hats. So
that's amazing. I love the fact that your introduction covers pretty much every aspect of the entire games industry. This is essentially supposed to be a podcast about games writers. And no one can deny it, you are clearly one of those as well.
In a lot of ways.
But with so much thought and philosophy and humanity behind what you're doing. Thank you for that introduction. It was
really,
really good.
Yeah, it's I was kind of, having seen some of your work before, Josh, I was hoping, but I didn't want to assume that we would get such a full-throated defense of literary criticism of games, because that pleases me to no end. And I think there's a lot here. But clearly so much of what you said there are things that you have thought about for a long time, and that's reflected as well in the article that you've written for us, Choose Yourself. In case people haven't had a chance to read it, I think you've covered some of that ground a little bit, but tell us a bit what you had in mind when you were writing this piece.
Yeah, Choose Yourself is a combination of it's a combination of a deadline fueled crisis and an existential horror, which I think is maybe a significant portion of my career. So when I saw the Blue Sky post go out about collecting essays for the Kaleidoscope, I was really excited by the idea. And I realized as I was trying to put a thing together that I was experiencing this tension that I've often felt throughout the more writing focused portions of my career, which is this desire to write something that is thoughtful and focused on games and this core spirit of the way that I experience games, and then also existing in a world that feels like it's melting down in real time, and that I am not sure sometimes whether the time that I'm spending in games is correct. That I look at here in the States, it's there are people being picked up off the street. There are, at the I think at the time around when I was writing this, a lot more of the discussions around immigration and ICE were really ramping up. You could hear, I remember sitting with my housemates playing Expedition 33 and hearing this long procession of car horns outside, and my housemates were like, oh, what is that? And in my head I'm like, oh, that's people following a car that just picked up somebody off the street. Those are the ways that people are trying to figure out how to adapt and give notice and let people and it's really hard for me to hold both of these things, that the work that I care about in games, that I have put decades of my life towards sort of honing this craft and idea, that is important, that the art that we're creating is what motivates change and creativity in a bunch of really impactful ways, not just to people in our industry, but to the people who play our games, right? If Final Fantasy IV has to be informed by some kind of personal tragedy because there's some terrible things that happened in that game. And if they had never taken that and turned it into that game, I don't know where I would be. And so there is something to the power of creating that art. And then at the same time, I'm like, but this art will not stop the thing that is outside of my door. And I honestly struggle with it every day. I every time I open Blue Sky to say like, oh, I'm going live. And the first thing that I see, I mean, today is posts about, oh, yeah, no, they're continuing to gut the Voting Rights Act. And yeah, Louisiana has just basically said, oh, we're going to kind of cancel our primary elections. Like, I'm watching these real things happen for which games will not fix them. And they directly affect my community. They affect me. And then it was like, okay, well, if you're going to submit this essay, there have to be words in a document at this time. And I couldn't decide what to write. And so I didn't decide. I chose both. Choose Yourself is an essay that I think it answers just as many questions as the first sentence. I think that the first sentence is, I hope you choose yourself. And then the rest of it is this back and forth of like how important it is for us to do this work and to be in this space and how beautiful this industry is. And also how fucking terrible so much of this industry is and how so many people who are at the reins right now are actively trying to like pull the rug out. Not just rug pull. I hate to use rug pull in this AI, you know, whatever, but like are actively undermining all of the people and the creative ideas and the intention that made this industry or making this industry what it is. And how in the midst of that, there are still so many of us who are out here fighting this fight and making amazing things, and it's worth it. And also none of us should have to deal with this. And I, at the end of the day, had this feeling of like, I want there to be one, at least one. I know that there will be an amazing set of talented writers who put things in this collection. And I wanted there to be one piece. I had to have my piece be indicative, not just of the work that I'm passionate about, but the time that I'm creating it in and the passion that I am fighting to manifest in the midst of that. And it's a situation that I haven't resolved. And so I felt like trying to give a conclusive
answer,
yeah, would just not be right. So that's
really fair. And like what you are contending with is well reflected in the article. And it's not just you, of course, who's contending with this, right? Like there's what's powerful about something like this is it can speak to the soul of someone who's going through something similar or has had similar things on their mind. I resonate a lot with the things that you've said, particularly this question that maybe every artist thinks about or everyone who's in the arts thinks about or who contends with sort of products of culture, let's say. I came in the opposite direction, actually. Like I worked on, I trained for and kind of worked for a career in public service. I worked on campaigns. I worked on in politics and I worked in the federal government for a long time. And then I moved into games. And I'm not sure I have an answer for that either. I just know that I feel pretty good. Like what you tap into in your article, I know I feel pretty good about doing my craft. You say this a few different times in the article, right? Like that what you still have is you still have sort of a story worth telling. And this was my experience, but I have felt more efficacious making art, I suppose, because it is something that is fully in my control. So many other things you need to partner with other people. You need massive consensus over a population that is very difficult to do. And that's not to say that's not worth doing it. But in some ways, it has made for me in my personal life, things that I produce creatively feel exceptionally more valuable than they might have been otherwise, because I know they wouldn't have existed if it weren't for me doing it. I'm not a cog in the machine when I'm writing a piece of dialogue or something. I'm helping to bring this little thing to life, and it brings a bit of joy to me and to other people around me. And that has been good. But I think like you, like I haven't really resolved that question of how do you contend with the fact that these are the things that you are choosing to do, even when it feels like there might be big problems for you to be addressing or to be working on. And I don't know, maybe it can be overwhelming for that to feel like you have to solve, like that every problem is is on your shoulders, right? Like that can be overwhelming. And the arts are a great way of contending with those things. So yeah, I don't know. Like the openness of your article, I think, is really notable. And there is something in it that I see from the voice that you've given here that has also brought you through it, right? So just in the way you're saying that maybe you haven't solved this, yet you still have a really, there's this love of being in games culture and loving games that comes through. And has that been a through line in your career? Has that been something that has felt like a safer space to come to? And if so, what an incredible thing. I mean, for so many people, like online games culture is not that, right? So what is it that has happened for you that has resulted in what seems like a great spine?
That's a really fair question. It is weird when you say, I'm trying to find the name. It's actually weird when you say that, because the idea of like being saved by this writing or this idea actually literally happened to me. So I wrote the piece, submitted the piece, promptly forgot that I wrote the piece, submitted the piece. It came through and I was excited about it, but you know, in the process of like moving to the next project, and so it just kind of fell out of the back of my head. And then a big shout out to Marla, who I got a DM that said, hey, I read the piece that you wrote and it really resonated with me, and I just wanted to thank you for putting it together. And I read this DM and was like, oh my God, what the hell did I write? Like the first thing I have is this panic. And so I go back and I open up the essay, and I wish I had written down. I was having this horrible day and was just like mentally fried, and in this space of really struggling with the work and trying to figure out like, am I even like, is this even a thing I should be trying to figure out right now? And so it was weird to like read my own words and be like, I guess that is kind of how I feel. Like this tension is not new. The today's iteration of it may feel some type of way, but I think that there has been a consistent truth in coming back to living with this tension. A partner of mine and I used to get into these arguments about the trolley problem, and she was primarily upset that I was talking about the trolley problem again, which eventually almost became this just like, how can I manage to weasel my way into a trolley problem reference here? And the thing that I have taken away from that, right? Everybody wants to talk about this idea of how do we decide what the right decision is in this, you know, in this situation of do we make one choice or the other, which one's the most ethical? And the only takeaway that I really sit with is what matters to me is that you're at the switch. Like it's not about, it is less about making the right decision. There's going to be a million different influences that make somebody think that one or the other is the right thing. The power is to recognize that like at this moment, there's a decision that you can make. Switch goes one way, the other, you can take off the other direction. You can go find somebody who's tying them to the track, whatever you want to do. We have some level of agency. With that agency comes power and consequence. And our ability to get a thing done is, or at least I should say my ability to get a thing done, is really dependent on the ability to sit with that idea that there is an opportunity for impact and consequence, and that it's important to act anyway. And so when I think about that, and I think about games and how much I've seen that impact of games in my own life and in the people around me, it really does feel centering, and that's what keeps bringing me back.
That's amazing. So I think I was just thinking about the trolley problem. The thing that always occurred to me with the trolley problem is that it's an impossible situation. It's a completely arbitrary impossible yep. situation, designed to be impossible. And this idea that there is even a right answer when you're in a structurally impossible situation perhaps doesn't even make sense. Like we do something. And I think your point answers that quite sort of matches with that quite nicely. It sort of connects to something that I wanted to ask you about, listening to what you say, that in everything you've described so far, there's a clear sense that you are, I think, very, very interested in the connection between the kind of the personal and the social, right? Like you're very, the way that you speak, the way that you wrote in your article, you're very interested in vulnerability and this idea of being vulnerable in a public space to kind of bring truth to a discussion rather than kind of walls and barriers and flags and all the nonsense thinking that goes with that. And that's right, scary but kind of amazing.
Yeah.
But I'm particularly fascinated by how that sits within the context of writing for games. Like if we just think about the craft for the moment, because games, you know, the classic thing is you have your hero, you have your centered, powerful figure who is going to dominate the world with their opinion and their ideas. Like it's right. kind of the opposite of what you were saying about the trolley problem. They're always at the switch. There's no one else is allowed even near the switch. This is my switch. I'm running the switch now. And that seems to me to be, you know, very far away from that position of vulnerability and kind of sort of cautious feeling. Firstly, I mean, do you agree with that? Maybe you don't see a contradiction between those two things at all. And secondly, if you do, when you're writing, how do you get around that and still sort of bring what you want to bring to what you're writing? How do you kind of make inroads against that contradiction?
Yeah, I think that's a tension that like there can be so much comfort. There can be a lot of comfort in power without consequence, right? The ability to have influence and have that influence just manifest in the way that you want. And I think that a lot of times when we talk about like writing in games and particularly like the influence of choice, a lot of the history of the influence and choice is like you get to be the powerful one and you do the thing. And then the world turns out in just the way that you wanted. And then like, eventually we were like, well, what if the world turned out in the way that you wanted bad, but we still made bad feel good, right? Like you can go dark in Fable and it's like, oh, you know, everything runs away from you, but it still feels there's a certain affirmation of like, this is the impact I wanted to have on the world. And now it is giving me what I asked for, even if it comes with some consequences or things I might feel uncomfortable with. And I think that I see where games can have. Like I still play those games, right? Like I still, yeah. you know, I would like they are still games. This is the beauty of games is that they provide so many different styles of system and place for us to explore. I played Marathon for the first time the other day and like, I took out an enemy that I thought was a bot and then they dropped a bunch of loot and I felt really guilty until I picked up the loot that was better than my own and was like, oh, I'm part of the problem now. That's oh no, because I'm not giving this loot back. I can't give this loot back. And then like seven bots came and knocked me out. And easy come, easy go. So whatever. For me, I think that it is really important to write the things that are personal because they are this opportunity to like reach out and touch somebody else. And I have found that the spaces where I feel resonance in my work comes from that level of vulnerability. Doing writing for Spirit Swap, a big shout out to the Spirit Swap team, to Soft Not Weak. You know, when I was putting together Canon's storyline, Canon is this angel who is really not from around here. Like everybody's not from around here. This is a range. Canon is really not from around here. And so when I was trying to think of how to create a relationship storyline that was with a person who like was not human, there is also this element of like, I have had this really strong desire for romance game for games with dating and romance to not revolve around sex constantly. Like, sex is obviously a part of the human experience, and this is all. But I think some of my own personal experiences, I was like, I want there to be space for romance and for intimacy that doesn't revolve around sex. And so writing canon storyline and having this level of what's meant to feel like, hey, this is intimacy, this is romance, this is closeness, but it's also not sexual, came a bit from my own lived experience. And when I see people who resonate with some of that, and when they have left, you know, Steam reviews or talk to other folks on the team, to me, it's like, oh, somebody else got to feel seen because I was willing to share this part of me. And that's what empowers me in game writing. And I understand that, like, there are a bunch of different ways to approach that. And for some people, it's like, how do I step out of the way and really get into the headspace of this character? And maybe there's a vulnerability or a space that comes there. But I think the more vulnerable we can get, the better.
What's interesting about this is I think I know the answer to this. Like, you're looking for places to convey interesting, true things in the writing that you do, wherever those opportunities exist. But in the projects you tend to take on, to what degree do you typically have control or influence over those things? Is it the case that you're typically on a project where you can do that? You can write a storyline with an NPC like this. That's really important. Or do you ever have to sort of take a project where it's kind of just given to you, or the genre such as it is different, that it doesn't allow for that? Maybe one can make an argument that no genre is too broad as to not allow some sort of human feeling, or what else? Why does it exist? Right.
Sure.
But what has been your experience? How have you encountered this?
Yeah, that's a fair question, because I think you're right. I've spent a great deal of my career pushing myself into places where I get to make that call. I think I have. Oftentimes when I am sort of pushed into the work where they're like, and you're going to do this thing, but, like, you know, that's okay. Do it in your own way. I have not enjoyed those as much. I think I have typically felt pretty strongly about like this particular perspective, this idea, this energy that I have, I'm not seeing it in the places that I want to see it. And so if somebody has to champion that, then I want to be in spaces where that idea is supported. I think, honestly, the space where I am encountering that challenge most right now is with Lancer Tactics.
Well, this is what I wanted to ask about. So yeah. Lancer, right? Like, what a great TTRPG. I mean, one of the most characterful and interesting ones, despite the fact that it's about a bunch of robots, right?
Right.
And for all of the reasons that you said in your intro, like, there's so many different ways of engaging with it. It definitely has been very successful, and it's also done a very interesting blend of a mainstream concept with the nerd culture concept with something that can go a bit farther. But fundamentally, it's about a bunch of mechs, right? So, like, how have you contended with this?
Yeah, it's part of what makes the project so exciting and also the most challenging. Lancer is Lancer is the most established IP that I've like gotten to like write for, and a big shout out to Massive Press, to Tom and Miguel, who put together this amazing franchise, and then also created this wide enough third-party creation license that, like, when we put the game together, you know, they were just like, yeah, go have a good time, right? We are creating this setting and this world that, like, if the game, you know, if the game is successful, like, we're influencing the way that many people are going to perceive the world of Lancer. And so it's important to not just it's important to like not just make good mech game, right? Like we're also trying to shape like what's the feeling, what are the energy, like the Lancer community stands for a lot of things. Like this is a very like not just trans inclusive, this is like a trans positive, this is an anti-fascist, this is a like when you come into this place, know that we stand for these things. We do not stand for these things. And at the same time, like, you know, somebody go ahead, put your, you know, dollar in the ludo narrative dissonance swear jar. We're also
first
making
time on the podcast.
Yeah.
I don't think it's been mentioned on the podcast actually. So yeah. Take it. Go for it. It's your
there
dollar.
We go. I think that's it's the tension of making big fighting robot mech game, right? Is that like we're making a game that the mechanics are glorifying combat and war in a time where we are regularly looking around and seeing the horrors of combat and war in incredibly personal, individualized understandings. And we're trying to figure out how to tell this story of, you know, how to tell stories of resistance and individuality and building community. And we're also, yeah, there's a lot of like space to try and figure out how to hold. And also like Lancer has not just its core rule book, but like multiple supplements that people have come out with, and a lot of there are a lot of ways that we want to make sure that we both like respect where it's coming from and also tell our own individual stories that are important here too. I think each of us on the core team, a big shout out to both Olive and Mark, as well as, you know, all of the other folks that we've worked with along the way, you know, have these pieces that we want to be able to see and what comes next. And so we're trying to figure out some ways to take on storytelling that is respectful of the idea that it comes from this tabletop role-playing universe where, you know, this is a space where people are telling their own individual stories, that it matters that you can have your four or five people sitting around a table and you're crafting a story that's intimate and made for you, because y'all are the ones making it. But we're also a small team, and you know, this is not Baldur's Gate 3 we're talking about to be really clear. So
I think one thing I really like about the description that you've given there is that it's such a considered and sort of mature approach to it, because I think there's a sort of top level approach to a game like this, which would be exactly as you suggested. It's like, oh, these are mecha robots and they're doing war, so it's big war stories, okay? And then you might react to that and say, well, big war stories are kind of morally compromised, that's a very ethical gray area, it feels a bit real right now, so maybe we just shouldn't touch that, maybe we just shouldn't do that, like let's just not go there. And both of those are very strong reactions that don't really have much thought behind them. And I love the way that you're describing it, this sort of sense that if you just stop a moment and actually say, okay, well, given the landscape that we live in and given the landscape of this story, what's the middle way? What's the way that balances all of these things? And there almost always is a middle way to tell a story, right? You just actually have to spend the time to find it, because it's not given to you straight away. You can't just copy, I don't know, whatever the reference point, you can't just make Aliens and say, well, it's relevant now, so off we go, because like, actually, is it? And I think that's really interesting. But it does lead me to a question, which is sort of when you're taking this considered approach and sort of exploring the space of the story and the politics and the feeling that you want to get across, how do you know when you're going in the right direction? Or perhaps more interestingly, how do you know when you're going in the wrong direction? When you need to, or this story beat's too crass, too violent, or too, how can you tell when you're charting that course correctly?
Yeah.
Because these are such big things that you're navigating between.
I feel like I have three different. When is he going to have one answer? He has three answers.
No, give us all.
No, go for it. Like, you've got thoughts. Let's hear those.
Answer number one is one of the other things that I've done is sensitivity consulting. I've worked with a number of projects to help them craft voice, craft, you know, especially when addressing situations that take on topics from marginalized folks. It can be really helpful to have somebody else who can be like, hey, by the way, not that way. That's That's yeah, gonna sound real weird to a number of people that you don't want to do that. And so I do think that some of it is having the, like, having other people in the room who can tell you, hey, by the way, like, this is going this direction. There's, you know, especially making games for an increasingly global market, like, there are ways there are tons of ways that language can be interpreted. There are tons of ways that different scenes, different ideas will feel different to people in different cultures. There's no way to cover it all, but it's pretty good idea to, like, figure out who are the people that are beyond me that I can ask some questions to. And so that's one of the things we factor in. And as we, especially as we get further into, you know, getting further down the production line, like, we have folks that we've lined up that we want to be able to have those conversations with. Number two is trying to have a strong personal sense of like, what is right and what we're shooting for. There have been decisions that we've made on the team where I've kind of put the hold on a thing or said, I don't think that we can quite do this yet because I don't think that we have made the rubber meet the road here. Like, until we've proved that we have this thing under control, I don't want us to, like, use this as a marketing beat, as a, you know, whatever the thing is, right? Like, we need to have a strong internal sort of excitement and understanding about the ideas that we're coming into. And then we use that as our guiding core for where we move next. As opposed to sort of letting this, I think the sort of nebulous core out here then guide our feelings or perceptions. And then third is none of them. You don't totally know. Like, it's the internet. It's games. It's this really big space, and there are the things that I'm sure that you all have, you know, that you've both had the experience where you're like, the little thing that I thought that wasn't going to be a big deal, this, like, one-off joke that I thought only I was going to get, why is everybody responding to this? I thought I would, you know. And then the flip side of, like, the place where you invest all of your heart and you're like, yeah, this is going to be the one that hits, and it just, nobody, it falls flat. There's just no way of really knowing. But I think that being able to surround yourself with a good team and have a strong internal core is the closest that you can get to having that sense of when you're moving in the right direction and when you're not.
I love this description of the craft process of that. I think it's really worth just reflecting that back, this sense that you have to be as open to ideas and other people's viewpoints as you can be, while not letting that direct your internal core. You still have to keep your core and know what you think is true, while at the same time accepting that when the thing actually lands in the world, you kind of don't have any clue how it's going to land exactly. And you have to deal with those things simultaneously all the time, the knowledge that you don't know where it's going, and you believe really strongly that this is the right direction to go in, and this other person is telling you something else, and all of those things at the same time. And I often, when talking to writers, especially writers who are kind of, I guess, working on the edge of their comfort zone rather than well inside their comfort zone, you know, with that kind of exploratory feel to it, you often get the sense that the writer is trying to make themselves as invisible as possible while still being absolutely rigidly there. Like, we're this sort of, I don't know, I sometimes talk about writers as being bridges, but it's almost more like being a kind of thin film of plastic between the world. Like, it's the bubble on the biome on Mars. Like, it's really important, but you also want it to be as transparent as possible. And mm-hmm. I just think it's a wonderful, wonderful description of it. And I really like that image very, very much. Sarge, I didn't have a question. I just wanted to...
No, I mean, I actually think that's quite well said. It's the second of your 3 points that I'm curious about, actually. The sense of having a strong core or a sense of direction. How do you go about doing that? Because clearly, like, you just gave an example from one of your last projects where you're reflecting something that I know to be true, and I think most writers know to be true, which is that there's always this bubbling of brilliant and exciting and interesting ways that this project can go, ways that could reach many of your narrative goals, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's perhaps easy to slice off the ones that
don't follow whatever the creative pillar is of your project, because maybe they're identifiable in some way. You're making a match three game and suddenly someone has pitched a JRPG and you're like, well, okay, that's not going to work, right? But where you do have a number of things that could potentially fit, that could fit for the project you're doing, while you're wearing your narrative director hat, how do you prioritize them? What's the technique you might use? And I know it's hard to do that in a sort of abstract sense, but
sure.
It sounds like you might have thought this through a little bit. Like, how do you think that through?
I kind of battle. I really like that question, because it makes me like, do I believe this thing that I'm about to say out loud? I think there are two things that I, especially from a direction, from a narrative direction perspective, there are two things that I try to balance. And it does, I think for me, we had a big meeting on the Lancer team that really, I think, centered on this idea of like, this spectrum of project versus people, that like, For Olive and Mark, who worked on the project for 2 years before I came on, they're very like, they found like this very solid project sync of being able to like, to be able to get things done quickly and to be able to have the conversations with each other that they needed to be able to figure out how to talk through an issue, and hit a really good stride in that. And I am comparatively a slower, let's talk this out, make sure people are on the same page. And that creates conflict, right? When there's a sort of change in that rhythm. And it meant that like the three of us have had to come together and figure out like, well, what is the way that we meet and find the center point for all of us, right? What are the ways that we have some of that people focus and then also have some of that project focus? And so when I come back to this idea of like, how do you find that core balance between the two, I think it is the thing that I try to follow from a narrative direction standpoint is one, like, what is the story? What is the idea, the core that we're trying to get across? And is this idea representative of that core? And for me, that's where I feel like that ends up being more me driven, right? That ends up being this sense of sort of what the project is to me. But the other thing that I try to factor in is like, how much is the team excited about doing this thing?
Right,
how much is this idea resonating with the people who are making the thing that's going to come together? For whatever idea or vision I might come up with, if it doesn't resonate with the people who are part of making it happen, it feels really flat by comparison. There are a lot of things that we're doing in Lancer right now, like our world building for Lancer Tactics. Like, Carpenter and Olive are actually like taking on and doing some kind of heads down workshopping on things that they want in the world building. And they were like, hey, well, do we want to make sure that you're like sitting on the meetings? And I was like, you know, from my perspective, like if this is a space to get you excited about things that we want to put into the story, like please go off. Like do the thing, like write down the things that you want to do. Know that we're going to come back and make sure that all of these things vibe. But like my excitement would be more vested in figuring out what things y'all are excited about and how we can wrap those into the overall space so that we're all connected to it, as opposed to like saying, and this is my idea right from the jump. Yeah. And let me force this out, because their minds are very different than mine. Olive has this amazing, like really biology science focused background in this entire lore of like the microbiota of Verdvilla that I think is incredible. I couldn't come up with that myself. Carpenter has this like, has so many different ideas of the ways that he wants to like bring in social situations that I'm not directly connected to, some of which are tied to his own lived experiences. I want us to be able to figure out what are the ways that we can make something that resonates together. Yeah, sorry if that's not quite an answer.
No, this is an extraordinary answer. Yeah. It's a great answer. And it's especially so because I think it does bring us back to your article. You are an incredibly reflective and thoughtful person, Josh. It's evident in the way you talk about these things and in some of these really mature decisions you've made about what is the best way to create a space where the people who are in it and the people who are going to be enjoying the products of that space are going to be able to find something special in it, right? Like that, that if there's anything that we can take away, like that is what it is to choose yourself. It's to choose yourself. You have to know yourself, know what you want to do, know what maybe the people around you might want to do. Josh, I think we might have to bring things to a close right there. Thank you very, very much for joining us. What a great episode we've had to be able to cover this. Josh Boykin, thank you. Thank you very, very much. Listeners, next week we will be opening the Kaleidoscope once more, finding another article to chat through and another wonderful contributor. So thank you. And until then, see you next time. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Thank you so much.